Welcome back to the 20-minute hit, back once again after a busy weekend of sport. Plenty going on, of course, in football and in F1 with the testing finishing last week. We had the NFL Combine. I really want to talk to somebody about that. This week, though, to kick things off, I'm not sure how many we're going to get through this week in terms of the number of podcasts. Maybe not as many as three that we had last week, but really excited to get the first one out of the way this Monday. And it's the right topic, really, to be talking this Monday morning. Tony Bellew against David Haye. Bellew, the cruiserweight champ, again, victorious against David Haye, the heavyweight boxer. It was a real war of words in the build-up to this fight, and it was all very surprising what happened at the O2 on the night with David Haye's Achilles blowing out during the fight and still fighting on. Never seen anything like it at all. And neither had the chap who I spoke to today about that, Sky Sports boxing commentator Andy Clark. Very good friend of mine. Andy and I have worked on a few things in and around London on a bit of football and stuff like that. He's obviously doing a lot now on Sky, their number two commentator. He was at the O2 Arena on Saturday night and was actually doing some commentary on the undercard before Sky Sports head of boxing Adam Smith took the reins in terms of the commentary for the main event and the slightly bigger fights that evening, as he always does. But Andy was still there, remained there, even got pushed out of a seat by Anthony Joshua, which is fair because you wouldn't really want to push back against Anthony Joshua, that's for sure. And I had a chat with him this morning about the fight, about Haye against Bellew, about what happened, how crazy it was, some of the technical side of the boxing bout as well, and his kind of view from ringside, or ring-ish side, if you will, of the fight. So here it is, Andy Clark on the 20-minute hit. I mean, I've just finished reading your column on what was the website, Boxing News or something like that, where you spoke
Boxing
to Frotch.
News online, yeah.
Where you spoke to Frotch afterwards, and I don't know. I just saw Frotch on TV this morning saying that Haye, you know, could come back and he'll still want a title shot at some point, and his career's not over. But then when you spoke to him, he kind of said, you know, it's a shame to see David kind of having to come back, perhaps for financial reasons, and it's never really going to bode well when you've been out for that long in boxing. It was quite contradicting points, really, from Frotch there in that sense.
Yeah, they are, aren't they? I mean, he's that. I don't know. You, when the dust settles a bit, sometimes people just look at it slightly differently, don't they? They just think, well, you know, maybe he's going to come back from the injury. If he wants to come back from your injury, then he's perfectly entitled to do that and try and fight on. Fighters are, you know what they're like. They don't ever really want to kind of step on other fighters because they all know what it's like in there. They all know how hard it is. So he just doesn't want to. I think what that is that he doesn't want to kind of be seen too much to be condemning David Haye. But he was pretty forthright when I spoke to him on Saturday. And it was a Q&A as well in front of an audience. So it wasn't anything off the record.
Yeah.
But he just, you know, time beats all men, doesn't it? It's that old saying and. It does, you know, just a handful of rounds in a few years and then coming back into a proper fight and his Achilles went. And you can say that it's bad luck, or you can just say it's age, and that's what happens when you get to that point. And it does, doesn't it?
It's amazing. I mean, I knew somebody at university who snapped their Achilles, and they had obviously their leg bandaged right up to the thigh for however many months, and like obviously it's a horrible injury. It was really weird watching it on TV to kind of watch somebody who can't even walk and can't generate the normal power that they have in punches still just going on. I know there's been the report as well that Bellew broke his hand during the fight early on as well, but I don't know. Again, you know boxing better than I do anyway, but From watching it, and I think I sent you a text message about it, saying it looked like Bellew never had the power to be able to knock Haye out, but it looked like Haye, as soon as the Achilles went, you know, never had a chance at all. And it was almost like you wanted to see the towel get thrown in a little earlier, as Bellew was trying to get him to do. Say, look, just stop it, because I'm just going to be beating on you, but it's not really going to be enough to stop it. And even the knockout blow wasn't really a knockout blow, was it? It was Haye just almost kind of giving in and saying, look, I just can't get up, and his team throwing in the towel in the end of just... maybe like three rounds too late, to be honest.
Yeah, I thought. Yeah, I mean, I was thinking the same thing. You know, when when the injury happened, you could see that it was lower leg. You could see that it was around the ankle, and you kind of expected that he probably rolled it, because fighters do that quite a lot, particularly when they're loading up and looking for big shots and missing, which is what he was doing. You know, Nigel Benn did it against Steve Collins, doing exactly that, through a really violent punch, missed and sprained his ankle. What was interesting about it for me was that when you saw the replays of it, you saw that he didn't roll it, that it kind of went on the inside. Mm. And that's always an indication that it's an Achilles injury, from what I'm told. And as soon as it was that, he had absolutely no chance at all. But fighters are, you know, they're not like other sports people. The nature of the sport means they're not. But mentally, they're not either in the way they approach things. Because, you know, in other sports, it's, you know, they athletes have to put up with pain all the time, don't they? And it's something they just have to tolerate. But at the same time, if you're a tennis player, it's easier to stick to individual sports, I guess, for a comparison. If you're Andy Murray, he'll play with aches and pains all the time. But if he picks up an injury, a proper injury in a match, then he'll get the trainer on, they'll check him out. And if it's a proper injury, which will get worse from him continuing, they'll pull him out, they'll stop him immediately. Yeah. Because it could have a big impact on his career from that point onwards. But boxers just don't do that. They don't differentiate between pain and injury. They just don't.
Is that because you've got so much time between fights as well? So if you do get an injury like that, it's like, well, look, if I can hold out and perhaps still get that lucky shot.
I think that's part of it. Because and at the stage that Hayes at there, and the stage that any fighter gets to when he's fighting for titles, that fight is so important. You know, if they lose it, then they can go, it can be the end, or they can go back 4 or 5 steps in their career, you know, and then it can take a long time to build yourself back up again. So that's why they put it all on the line. You know, it's worth it for them to risk everything, basically. But also, it's just their mentality. It's just how they are as people. They, you know, they fight to the death. You know, it's what they do. They don't, you know, accepting defeat in any form for them is just unthinkable. And they will just keep going and going and going if they're allowed to, until they just cannot move. And that was pretty much what happened. And I hear what you're saying about stopping the fight earlier.
Well, it's just getting a barrage of middle blows from Belly.
I'm guessing the conversations would have been had in the corner between rounds, and Hay would have said, look, no, I want to continue. And Shane McGuigan thought, well, I need to give you every chance. And then after a while, he just thought, this is ridiculous now. Mm. Because, you know, he's a good trainer, Shane, and he's not going to let his man, you know, unduly suffer. As for the injury itself, I think once an Achilles tendon has snapped, horrific though that is, it can't get any worse. so it's just, do you know what I mean? It's just the damage, it's gone, isn't it?
Yeah,
if it's gone, it's gone. So the actual injury is what it is, and it's just then whether he can actually still win the fight. And I think it got to the point where Shane McGuigan decided you can't win anymore. You're not going to land that one big punch, which was always a possibility.
There were some times where it looked like Bellew was struck a couple of times afterwards, when Hay was like fighting out of the corner, fighting for his life, and almost using the ropes to prop himself up, and then tee off, use the spring of the ropes at times to kind of generate a bit more power. And he caught Bellew, and there was still this idea of, like, if Bellew doesn't finish him properly, again, speaking from a TV viewer, he could end up just getting caught with a sucker punch, which Hay was more than willing to try and dish out in between fits, really, of getting his balance.
Yeah, I mean, that was always a possibility. You know, that was what made it a really, really fascinating fight to watch, because you saw the injury and you could see everything change with the injury. I mean, I'd say Hay was ahead up until the injury, but, you know, Bellew was doing well. He was doing what he needed to do. He was staying out of the way and he was catching Hay. And he had taken a couple of big ones from Hay and he'd taken them, which for him was one of real positivity. So they felt at that stage that what they suspected about Hay, that he wasn't what he used to be, was right. But like you say, Hay was doing everything he possibly could just to try and land that one punch. And Bellew's a very smart boxer. You know, he said a lot of things down the years and done a lot of things to draw publicity to himself. And sometimes, a lot of the time, it's distracted from the fact that he's a really good fighter. You know, he was a very good amateur, won the ABA 3 times. You can't do that without a solid technique. And he knows what he's doing. He's not going to get blinded by red mist, maybe earlier in his career, but not now. And when he would have seen that Hay was immobilized, basically, he would have known that the chances of him being able to, he would know after a while whether he was going to be likely to be able to stop Hay or not. And I think he really gave it a crack for 2 or 3 rounds. and then realised, actually, I don't think this is probably going to happen. So what I don't want to do now is take any undue risks and leave myself open. And he was perfectly happy to box up to the end of the 12 rounds and just stay out of trouble, because when the fight was stopped, he was up 96-93 on all three cards. So, you know, he just needed to get through another couple of rounds. But yeah, I mean, it was a pretty extraordinary spectacle in many ways, because nobody thought that was going to happen.
You can't predict that, yeah. Can you? Like,
it's utterly unpredictable. It'd be impossible to predict. And it was just, you know, the atmosphere was great. The atmosphere inside the O2 was fantastic. And yeah, I mean, by the end of it, you know, I don't particularly know either of them, but by the end of it, I kind of felt a bit sorry for Hay, because, you know, he's come back and it hasn't worked out. And he was kind of pleading for the rematch. And yeah. I just can't see it. I just can't see it, because it'll be such a long time away by the time he's recovered from his injury. I think any interest in it really will have disappeared. And Bellew's, you know, he's not going to be looking to take any other heavyweight fights. He knows that he's not one.
Do you think? Because he's been, I mean, Eddie Hearn's kind of pushing around Bellew for a heavyweight title shot now. And like, I mean, if anything, we saw he doesn't have the physical capability to match a proper heavyweight, except for trying to, you know, drain down their energy and reserves by keeping that head moving, avoiding shots and being very careful. I mean, it obviously is a fighting style that can work, but on an actual title fight, I imagine it could be a disaster for Bellew, that sort of thing at heavyweight.
I'd be amazed, honestly, if he continued at heavyweight. This fight just came along because Hay used to be a cruiser. Obviously, Bellew is a cruiser, and Hay and his two comeback fights are coming at 16 stone, which, you know, is, yeah, a reasonable amount above the cruiserweight limit, but it's not big. You know, he's not like a Anthony Joshua or Vladimir Klitschko or really any of the heavyweights now are all pretty massive and have been for the last 10, 15 years. I'd be absolutely amazed. You know, he's made a lot of money from that fight, Tony Bellew.
We heard all about that in his post-match speech, yeah, didn't we?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what they're in it for, you know. That's what they're in it for. And he'll make some good money for defending his WBC cruiserweight title next. And if some other kind of... It was a one-off this. That was what I always thought about it. And that's why I think there's no need for a rematch anyway. It was a one-off kind of occasion where you've got two big personalities. They both talked the fight up tremendously, although it boiled over a bit at times. There was a lot of interest in it. Great story behind Bellew winning the cruiserweight title at Goodison, being in Creed. We were hearing he signed for Creed too. So, I mean, everything is going his way at the minute. And sold out arena. It was tremendous. But, you know, the idea of putting Bellew in with Joshua, who was ringside, or Joseph Parker, who's the WBO, or Klitschko, or Tyson Fury, or any of those fighters, to me, is just laughable.
Yeah.
Because he's just not big enough. He's just nowhere near big enough. It'd be suicide.
Well, he did say very quickly when he was stood next to Joshua, he was like, "Well, I don't want you." Like, that's one thing he certainly didn't want. But yeah, I mean, size-wise, he just wouldn't be able to cut it at all. Not at all. It could be almost like it'd be a massive payday again, wouldn't it? Bellew seems to be out for. I mean, he's made that kind of quite obvious that, look, he's secured his kid's future, which is great, and the boxers are in it in part for a lot of the money, right? It'd be like another pantomime one, if you will, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, everybody expected Hay to win that fight and win it easily. And a lot of people really feared for Tony Bellew's safety and his health. But there were a lot of questions with Hay, which were, is he still what he was? Because he's been out of the ring for such a long time. In the time that he'd been out, Bellew had had dozens of rounds and was a lot more active and had won the world title and all those kinds of things. People still thought that Hay might, you know, take him out in pretty violent fashion. But there were a lot of questions. There are no questions attached to other active top heavyweights in the world. They're all fighting regularly and have been for a while and have beaten good opponents. So there's no chink in the armor to exploit there. Well, you know, when you look and think, well, maybe he's not what he used to be, or maybe he's this, or maybe he's that, maybe he's got this weakness or he's slowed down. They don't apply. So, you know, I understand that he wants, you know, if another fight like this could somehow get made, then that would be great for him, because it would be, you know, they're in it, you know, it's a very hard way to earn a living and they want to make as much out of it as they possibly can. But I think really now, having taken that big risk against Hay, and it was a big risk, you know, with his future career and with his long-term health, you know, I'm not exaggerating, you know, people beforehand were really thinking that this was physically a big risk for him to take. I don't see the need for him to take another one. You know, what he wants to do is securing his kid's future is great, and having that financial security is fantastic. But what he wants to do is be in a position where he can enjoy that for decades to come. Surely,
yeah.
You know, that's the win for a boxer, is making a lot of money and getting out at the right time. And, you know, he's still got that cruiserweight title, and there's some big fights out there for him for that. Not nearly as big as Hay. You know, they wouldn't be on pay-per-view. But he's had a couple of those now. You know, he had one against Cleverly as well. So he's doing okay. Yeah, burgeoning film career too. So everything's looking great for him.
Weird to think of the Scouse accent on the big screen again, kind of thing. Although he didn't have to do too much in Creed 1, I have to say. In terms of, like, with Hay as well, he didn't really... Obviously, I personally don't really enjoy the kind of pantomime around boxing that's in the pageantry and the build-up and the, oh, I'm gonna rip his head off and all that kind of stuff. It just seems very WWF, WWE type thing. But David Haye didn't exactly cover himself in glory in the build-up to this fight, and it was weird how very much like social media during the fight completely flipped on its head in terms of... I mean, he got booed going into the ring on Saturday, but nobody can take away the heart, I suppose, that he's shown. That's the word that's been used a lot. But he's still David Haye at the end of the day. And it was kind of weird to see that at the end you mentioned like the almost begging for a rematch, in that he built this up and built this up so much and came in with that very arrogant David Haye build-up style. And then it was weird to see him, as you say, begging for, like, you know, this can't be it yet. This can't be it yet. I'm going to get the surgery done. I'm going to get fit again. And I want to keep going. I want to keep going. And people coming out and saying, you know, he can still keep going if he wants to. He's only 36 and stuff. But it was a real quick change between 12 rounds of how you kind of viewed David Haye. And there was no mention of the injury in the post-match fight as well. Completely different. Obviously, everybody remembers the Klitschko fight. And he came, oh, my toe hurts. Oh. Whereas this, Achilles snaps. He doesn't make a single comment about it in the interview. And it's, you know, Bellew was a better fighter on the night. He did well. Fair play to him. That was really weird as well for me.
Yeah, I mean, it happens more than you'd think in boxing, really. You know, with people changing their opinions of people since the first bell and the last bell. And it did on Saturday, like you say, you know, the more of the support inside the arena was for Bellew. Most people thought it would be for Haye, but I always thought it would be for Bellew because he's come across in the build-up as basically just being more likeable. And generally in boxing, not that many people who go to a fight will be there to support one particular fighter. Not a fight, you know, when there's a crowd of that size.
Yeah.
But it's just, you see them lay themselves bare in there. And you just kind of tend to forget everything else. You kind of tend to forget the unpleasant things they've said and the things that they said that have made you thought that, you know, they're not the kind of person that you would want to spend any time with, shall we say.
Difficult to forget yoga on a boat, though, in a build-up to a fight. That's one that will always stand out.
Yeah, I know. But when you take all of that away and, like, sipping martinis in a jacuzzi and all the rest of it, you see him in the ring there in pain, hardly able to move, and he's still not going anywhere. And he's still taking his punches and he's still coming back and he still wants more and he wouldn't quit. They had to throw in the towel, and it's impossible not to have kind of admiration for that. But these things do turn around quite a lot. I mean, I was talking to Frotch after the fight, Carl Frotch, and he was working on Sky as well. And he was basically saying that his first fight against Groves, he went into that fight as a crowd favourite. Absolutely. People didn't like Groves because Groves was trying to get under Frotch's skin. People thought Groves was a cocky upstart and all the rest of it. But by the final bell, after the performance that Groves had put up, it was Frotch who got booed out of the arena because people thought that it was stopped too soon. And he had fans spitting in his face. And it was Groves who got cheered out of the Manchester arena that night. So, you know, these things do happen. But, you know, it was still really a kind of a comeuppance for Haye in some ways, because in a way, it reminded me of Adrian Broner against Marcus Maidana. I don't put Haye in the same category as Adrian Broner because, although he seems to calm down a bit recently, I've found him down the years just utterly loathsome and tedious. But he came into the ring against Marcus Maidana with his usual ludicrous ring entrance and all his, you know, just absolute nonsense. And Maidana beat him up for 12 rounds. And there was a great shot of Broner leaving, walking down the bows of the stadium after the fight. No one with him. Nobody with him. All the people who came into the ring with him, combing his hair and all the rest of it, nowhere to be seen. Just guys. And that's, you know, they're by themselves when it comes down to it. And I think that's what people see. You know, they look at Haye and all the stuff in the build-up, but all they see is him by himself in there. unable really at times to defend himself, but just refusing to give up.
Just going back to the Bellew comments as well about the securing the kid's future. Do you think boxing always has been more about the money than the titles, perhaps? I mean, a title at the end of the day, people want to be in big fights and title fights, but it seems now they want to be in big fights and title fights to make the money as opposed to having the belt around the waist, and the belt is just a good means to get the money in that sense. And again, that's just what I've kind of got from Bellew, and I'm wondering if that's a change over boxing over time of how fighters view it.
I don't think so, no. I mean, it's, you know, what should happen is that the belts will bring money, but it's not what always happens, because you need more than just a title. You need other things that go with it. You need to be a popular fighter. People want to come and want to come and watch you. You need to be able to sell a fight. And that's down at the lower weights. Don't make as much money as fighters in the middleweights or the high weights, because they're not as good to watch. You don't get as many knockouts and all that kind of thing. So, You know, the money is hugely important, because a living. And really, it kind of goes in two stages. Is that if you manage to get a world title, then the world title will mean that you make more money, because it will raise your profile, firstly. And secondly, when it comes to purse splits, if you're the champion taking on your mandatory challenger, you will see the thick end of the cash.
Yeah.
With someone like the IBF, for example, it's 85% to 15% split. So once you've got the position of champion, you need to try and make that belt make as much money for you as you possibly can. And what they used to do in the old days was that they would fight a lot of non-title fights in between title defences, where you could cash in on the kudos of being champion and make a good purse without actually having to risk losing it.
Yeah.
Now, nobody really does that now. Selby had a non-title fight on the weekend, but that was because his mandatory defence got cancelled a few weeks beforehand and he just wanted to get back in the ring. That wasn't about money at all. But then you could step up another level from that, whereby you've won titles, but then the titles don't really seem to matter anymore. It's just about the size of the fight and the amount of the money. And that's what Mayweather was doing towards the end. I mean, there were titles involved in his fights, but they were of no significance, really, because he was seen as being the best fighter in the world. And he would nip up a couple of pounds, down a couple of pounds. Alvarez is kind of getting himself into the same category now, where he was fighting at catchweight for middleweight, and his next fight's up at 164.5 pounds, I think, against Julio Cesar Chavez. And that's not for a title. But, you know, it just doesn't really matter. Once you get to that point, you can just kind of do what you want. But, it's always been about the money, to be honest, because, you know, if you come away from a career in boxing having won some titles and not made some money, then something's gone badly wrong.
But did you end up, definitely right by ringside, or were you for the fight, or were you just kind of I saw in the article you were a few rows slightly further back because Joshua came and shifted you out of your seat, kind of thing.
Yeah, I was slightly further back. So I did the first two fights. I did Chet Cheeseman's fight and then Lee Selby's fight. Then Adam Smith, who always does the top of the bill in for the pay-per-views, he slotted into the commentator seat. And I was just kind of seat-hopping then for a bit. And I was fine for a while because one of the seats was reserved for Paulie Malignaggi, who was fighting later on anyway. So he obviously wasn't going to be there. So I just sat there for a bit. And then once his fight was over, even though he got stopped, we were pretty sure he was going to come down and join the commentary team.
Yeah.
So after that, I sat in Joshua's seat for a bit, and then he turned up and, you know,
you're going to move.
but I wasn't too far away. I was only like about another four or five rows back. So yeah, it was a good VR. I couldn't complain.
Do you kind of prefer watching the bigger fight rather than commentating on it, or would you obviously like? I mean, Adam Smith is Adam Smith at the end of the day at Sky Sports, and he's probably going to be doing those major fights for a long time. But is that the kind of one where you're like, it's actually nice to sit back and watch it a bit rather than be involved in working on it and just enjoy the event and the occasion and the atmosphere?
Yeah, and it's great. It's great. You know, I mean, obviously I would love to be commentating on it, and that's what I want to do in the future. Absolutely. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm in a very good position at Sky because, you know, the commentator, the number one commentator, is also the head of boxing, and he's someone I get on really well with. So there was no kind of frustration or issue there for me. It's there's nothing to complain about there. And he's been there for nearly 25 years and he's a good commentator. So
it's quite
easy for me really to kind of, you know, you're not going to be commentating on the top of the bill. And you're not sitting there burning with frustration. You can just take a step back and just watch it. And you know, it was great on Saturday. The pay-per-view Sky is the razzmatazz and the ring walks and the lighting and the sound, and the money is top draw, and the ring walks were were just tremendous. You know, you get Michael Buffer involved and all those kinds of things.
Love that guy. You
know, yeah, you can't. You know, pay-per-views are always a bit of it's an age-old debate as to what is and what is not a pay-per-view. And the simple fact is that you don't know until you get where it isn't. The one thing that you can always provide and one thing that Sky always do is that if it's a pay-per-view, then the money is spent into making it into an event, you know, into a spectacle. You can't guarantee that a fight's going to be good. You can never guarantee that.
Yeah.
In any sporting fixture, can you? It should be good sometimes and it's terrible. But they will make sure that the event status is absolutely there. And that's why I think boxing in this country is done so much better than it is in the USA. Because you look at Mayweather-Pacquiao, built up as a super fight. And of course it was a super fight. But for those of us who watch a lot of boxing, you knew that the chances were it wouldn't actually be that interesting a fight for most people to watch. They would find it disappointing.
Yeah.
But what was particularly disappointing was I thought, you know, 15,000-seater arena. I know Mayweather had his deal with the MGM Grand, but to put a fight of that size in that small an arena, and I thought the kind of the ring walks and all the rest of it and all of that were just really pretty hopeless, to be honest.
I do think though the O2 and like putting obviously Froch Groves 2 was in Wembley and things like that. I mean, Wembley Stadium, 80,000-90,000 is the O2 is too big for me in terms of I've sat at the back of that and watched a fight and you can't see anything. Even the screens aren't big enough to be able to see anything. I can't imagine what it's like at the top of Wembley where watching a football game is bad enough up there, let alone trying to watch a fight, and at least the screens are huge there. There is kind of a middle ground for like a perfect boxing arena, really, isn't there? I mean, 15,000 for a big fight is a bit small, but everything else can sometimes be a little bit too big. It's like stand-up comedy. You don't get that intimacy that I really like in boxing, and both you and I have sat ringside before at fights, and you get so much more sucked into it when you can obviously hear the blows, and then you hear the rest of the atmosphere kind of coming from behind you, around you, and people just behind you getting amped up for it. Whereas I think it can get lost if you're in a bit too grand an arena, per se.
Yeah, to an extent, yeah. I mean, you know, the O2 and the Manchester Arena are as tight as you can be, really, for that kind of size of crowd. But you're right. If you're right up at the top of the O2, you don't really see a lot. If you're in the... You don't need to be ringside, though. If you're in the tiered seating, the kind of first level,
yeah,
and the tickets for that are not that expensive, that's a really good spot to be. It's actually better to be kind of halfway up that than it is to be a few rows back on the floor, because you can, you know, the elevation allows you to see more. I mean, you know, at Wembley, for example, yeah, I mean, you know, the vast majority of people who go will be able to see very, very little, but they're just going for the kind of, for the event, for the... The
spectacle, if you will,
just being able to say that they were there, that's what they're there for. And yeah, the bigger the arena you get, the further away you're going to be, and that ring is not very big. And the place to watch boxing, absolutely, is and I never forget what a kind of privilege it is to be so close to the action is right up at ringside, because you just see everything, you know, you hear everything, you can hear the corners, you can really see their faces when the punches land, in the announcements and the national anthems beforehand and all that kind of thing. And that's, you just can't beat that. But I think ringside tickets for Saturday were about $8,000, I think, was what I read that they were going for.
And
that's fine if you're Vince Vaughn or Wayne Rooney who were there or whatever. But you know, not so great if you're a normal working person.
Yeah, very much so. I'm not interested in paying that amount of money. I'll try and sneak my way in some way, like the guys that did for the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, who just kind of snuck in on the back of his entourage, and ended up sat ringside and kind of seat hopping like you were on Saturday afterwards. Mate, I'll let you get off because I know you're busy. And cheers for having a chat, mate. Really appreciate it. I really enjoyed that column as well, mate. If you do them everyone, it's quite good. It's the insight's so much nicer than, like, you know, generic chat and boxing.
I've done a couple now, yeah, but it's quite a good fun. I quite enjoy doing that. I know the guys at Boxing News pretty well, so they were they were up for it.
Nice one, man. All right, buddy. Well, I'll catch you soon. Cheers, Andy.
Take it easy, Ollie.
Cheers. Big thanks to Andy Clark joining us on the show today. You can find Andy on Sky Sports Boxing. He'll be doing plenty of commentary for them throughout the year and various other places as well, of course. You can find him on Twitter as well, at Andrew Clark. It's Clark with an E, so it's at Andrew Clark 19. At Andrew Clark 19. All one word. Doesn't really matter about cases, does it, on Twitter? I can never remember. But yeah, you can find Andy there. Lovely bloke, knows plenty about his boxing and always happy to help and talk a bit of boxing whenever and wherever he can. Hopefully we'll be talking a little bit more sport on the podcast this week. I'd love to talk a little bit about the NFL, about the combine that took place over the weekend, over the last few days or so, the 40-yard dash record being broken by John Ross from Washington University. 4 seconds, 0.22. Insane speed that. Would like to see him come to the Philadelphia Eagles, the wide receiver. We'll touch on that hopefully later on in the week. Wouldn't mind touching as well on a bit of generic football. Of course, I say generic. It was thrilling this weekend, especially with the Liverpool-Arsenal game. Liverpool dominant against the Gunners and Alexis Sanchez left on the bench. What does that mean? Hopefully try and talk to somebody about that later on this week as well. And plenty more going on. But we'll leave it there for today. A big thanks for listening. As always, we've overrun slightly well into the half hour now. So I do apologise about that. We'll be back hopefully in a few days' time with a little more sporting discussion. But until then, have a very good one.